Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
But first to the United States, where Malcolm Turnbull, or should we say Prime Minister Trumbull, will be heading off during the week to meet up with the US President Donald Trump. There's a lot at stake for both men in this meeting. The relationship got off to a very rocky start. You'll remember that phone call. It was all about immigration and the deal that was done before President Trump took office to take refugees from Manus Island. And there's a lot more at stake as well. The Australian-US alliance is extremely important to both countries, and regionally it's been a real feature. In fact, the occasion that they'll be marking together, the anniversary of the Battle of the Coral Sea, just tells us how important this alliance was and is. The 4th to the 8th of May in 1942, a major naval battle in the Pacific between the Japanese Imperial Navy and the Australian and US forces, and it was important that we worked together then. The question on everybody's minds, I suppose, will we be working together again in some sort of regional conflict if North Korea makes good its threats? Well, to talk about those things and also President Trump's 100 days in office, we're joined by Professor Michael Ondaatje. He's the National Head of the School of Arts at the Australian Catholic University. Good evening.
It's great to be with you, Stephen.
Thank you. Firstly, we've heard in the news Donald Trump thinks his 100 days has gone pretty well. What do you think?
His critics would probably say that's fake news. Trump's critics would point to a chaotic, dysfunctional White House where there have been multiple policy U-turns, legislative failures, and a lot more. And the truth is, judged by the goals that he set for himself, Trump has fallen well short. So he planned to have, I think it was 10 key bills passed or at least making their way through Congress. There has only been one, and it was a dismal failure, the attempt to repeal Obamacare. And some of your listeners might recall that he made certain promises around banning immigration from Muslim-majority countries. Those attempts have been rejected by the courts, and the wall isn't being built. So when you take all of that together and also factor in that he's the least popular, or put another way, the most unpopular president at the 100-day mark since polling was first done in the 1950s, you'd probably put a cross next to his name. There is, however, another cross-section of people in the United States who would see it rather differently.
Well, and that's the feature of this presidency. It's quite amazing, isn't it? Because the more he's criticised by the traditional press, and he's had, I don't think I've seen reporting like it in decades. The New York Times, Washington Post, they're livid, and they're not afraid to say so. But every time they do, all it means is that his supporters gather more strength and courage.
Absolutely. The more abuse that his critics hurl at him, the more the people who voted for Trump in the election get behind him. So I saw some very interesting figures today, Stephen, that confirmed that about 95-96% of people who voted for Trump in the election think he's doing a pretty good job. And they're the sorts of people out in small towns in states like West Virginia who have lost jobs because manufacturing's gone offshore or because of Obama's regulations around the environment. Trump is a strong supporter of coal. He's a strong supporter of steel. And when he stands up and says those things, people in those communities feel very deeply and very strongly that he's speaking for them.
Well, he's got to start delivering on that because he's got 4 years, and it's not very long, and he's 100 days into the 4 years. And as you've mentioned, some of the big ticket items have not yet been started, and they're not looking like they'll come about any time soon. The wall is just a complete farce. Not only can he not get it started, I suppose he'll make some attempts at that, but there's no chance at all that Mexico will ever pay for that. And as for Obamacare, the ironic thing about all of that is that he's got a Congress that he should be able to control.
That's correct. And what we're seeing here, I think, is that the business of politics is messy. Democracy is not easy. It's hard. And stream of consciousness politicking conducted through social media and Twitter and so on is a poor substitute for the hard work of policy.
Yeah, you laugh. I mean, I laugh, but in fact, it makes me cross, and I'm not the only one, I'm sure, because it's easy to make these glib promises and to get the crowds roaring, but as you've said, it's very difficult. Gosh, even Donald Trump yesterday, in a grab that I saw, said, oh, it's a bit harder than I thought it was going to be. I've got to work a bit harder being the president. I thought it was going to be easy. I mean, who is he fooling?
It's not easy, and one of the things that he did, I think more than any other president, is create expectations that he was going to do the impossible. He was going to bring back jobs that have gone offshore. He was going to bring back jobs which have been bubbled up by technology. Now, as you say, he has to deliver on that, and if he doesn't, I think his supporters will have something to say about that in 3.5 years' time.
Now, 1-300-40-2020, if you'd like to have your say about this issue and the US-Australia alliance as well, I guess Professor Michael Ondaatje from the Australian National University. Well, let's get to this alliance. So they all turn up there on the USS Intrepid. It's a museum, a naval museum on the west side, moored on the west side of New York. That's where their meeting will take place. It's highly symbolic. And all of the optics, as they say, all of the optics will be about military cooperation and our great alliance, where we've stood up for the values, not only defending each other, but defending world freedom. And all of that's true. All of that's true. So how do they repair the very bad start that they had with this phone call?
That's a good question. I mean, I think the tensions that are running high on the Korean Peninsula make it absolutely essential for both leaders to put aside whatever difficulties they had in that, conversation on the phone not long ago, and get down to the business of, A, fulfilling the spirit of what ANZUS was meant to be about.
And so given where it's taking place, and given it's the anniversary of a great victory at sea, would you expect some sort of announcement, or certainly a lot of talk about how they're going to start to try to talk down Korea, or if necessary, defend the rest of the world?
Well, the only predictable thing about Donald Trump has been unpredictability, Stephen. But I would think that there will be an announcement about some course of action with respect. It can't drift for much longer. I said to someone today that this is almost like a longer version of the Cuban Missile Crisis, but it's well past the 13 days. And we really are confronting a regime that is incredibly unpredictable, that has weapons and certainly has ambitions to develop a greater capacity to strike at the heart of enemies. So this would be the time to do it. We've heard a lot of commentary about some of the options on the table for the United States and how Australia might help with those, but I think we'll hear more this week.
Likewise, is it possible Australia gets drawn into something in Syria with the United States?
Well, it's possible. I would think unlikely. I think the greatest challenge at the moment is in the Asian region with North Korea.
All right, but let's zoom in on that a little bit further, because now you've got a three-way tryst. The US and China have their bilateral relationships. Australia and China, we have bilateral relationships, very important for us in terms of trade. Our economy highly exposed to the Chinese economy. And Australia and the United States have bilateral relationships. But with the President of the United States talking Fortress America and actually closing down the trade, erecting the trade walls, now, this tryst, Australia, China, the US, it looks like, as the smallest country, Australia might start to become, a loser in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the challenge for Australia is to find a way to be China's friend, but at the same time to continue to be a strong ally of the United States. And, all of this is taking place against a backdrop of massive transformation around the world. So power is moving decisively from west to east, and that is fueled by China's economic rise. It's now the second largest economy in the world. By 2030, it will be the largest. So what does Australia do in that context? We want to continue to have a relationship with China because that relationship underpins our economic success and trajectory. But at the same time, we want to be moving strategically to ensure that we have protection from the United States that we've come to rely on.
So, what I was going to ask you, so who should we be cozying up to most? Where do we shift the focus of our attention? There are two schools of thought. There's one that says you stick with the traditional US alliance, for example. The second school of thought is we flick our attention to China because we're part of Asia.
I think John Howard had it right when he said, in a way, that that's a false choice, that we shouldn't feel compelled to choose between history, i.e. the United States, and geography, i.e. China. Mm. I think it is infinitely possible, and Korea, you know, would be one area where we could try to find common ground and actually work together, and we could actually see how the United States and China, although they are competitors, do from time to time have shared interests in working together. So I don't feel at the moment that the choice is as stark as that.
There's some interesting polling figures on that issue the other day.
Yeah, I mean, this is incredible, and it surprised me that when the Lowy Institute polled Australians on whether they felt that the relationship with China was more important than the relationship with the United States, 50% said yes, 50% said no. It was, you know, split down the middle. And when you look a little bit deeper into it, older Australians support a closer relationship with the United States. But for Australians under the age of 30, 35, more actually think that the relationship with China is more important. And I actually think that reflects, again, a recognition on their part that economic power is moving from west to east, and that it is time actually to look forward rather than backward. And for them, looking forward means looking at new relationships, new partnerships, and actually rethinking the old ones.
Well, this is Open House around Australia. We're talking to Michael Ondaatje, and 1-300-40-2020 is our number. I'm going to ask you finally, Michael, this question. If you're looking at the situation in the Asia region in particular, or particularly the Korean Peninsula, can you see any hope in that situation?
I can see hope. I mean, I was talking to my wife about this in the morning, and I said I have hope grounded in history, and my conviction... and this is sort of a quote from Martin Luther King, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Wow.
And I don't have a great deal of confidence at the moment in the current president of the United States, but I am comforted by a sense that our trajectory is bigger than any one person, that institutions and values define who we are and shape our direction, and that these institutions and these values will continue to serve us very well despite the challenges in front of us in the region.
Well, thank you very much for your time tonight. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.